The next two subjects for our root cellar program are as unrelated as Christmas and the Easter Bunny. They are next on the list of subjects from the book Minnesota 150 by Kate Roberts. The two topics for this time are Cass Gilbert and Robert Gilruth. These subjects are the people, places, and things that shaped our state and our country. They were nominated for the sesquicentennial exhibit at the Minnesota Historical Building. The event was celebrated in 2008, 150 years after Minnesota became a state. Well, let's start with Cass Gilbert. You probably said to yourself, the name does ring a bell, but can't put your finger on it. Well, anyway, he is the architect that designed and built the Minnesota Capitol Building. He is one of America's celebrity architects and received much of his status from designing and building our Capitol right here in Minnesota. Born in Ohio, Gilbert moved to St. Paul as a young boy. When he was 17, he dropped out of school and began working in a local architect's office. He later completed his architectural studies at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. He then, like many of his peers, took a grand tour of Europe to study the many classical styles of architecture that would help shape his designs. Well, Jan and I can attest to that. We saw so many different buildings designed by famous architects and built hundreds of years ago. It is a marvel, an eye-opener, and somewhat unbelievable as one building after another of beautiful architecture appeared before our eyes. They were in places like Madrid, Barcelona, Venice, Florence, Rome, Athens, and many others. Cass Gilbert first took a job with a New York firm when he returned to the United States, but later moved to St. Paul and established a practice with James Knox Taylor. Gilbert designed many office buildings and churches throughout Minnesota. He also designed many homes along Summit Avenue in St. Paul. He then received the State Capitol Building Commission. Don't you feel some pride when you look at it? It is one of the best state capitol buildings in the country. The Capitol's design attracted national attention, and Gilbert became a national figure in the realm of architecture. He received commissions for huge projects and moved to New York City. He designed the United States Custom House there and many others. A couple of his landmark buildings include the huge skyscraper, the Woolworth Building on Broadway in New York City, which Jan and I saw on our trip this winter, and the U.S. Supreme Court Building in Washington, D.C. He also designed and built two other state capitals as well, Arkansas and West Virginia. If you have not toured the State Capitol Building here in Minnesota, please do so. Not only is the Capitol Building impressive from the outside, the inside design is excellent as well. We give our thanks to Cass Gilbert, who had the artistic vision and attention to detail to complete this project with such style. It is difficult to believe that it opened in 1905. The next subject is Robert Gilruth. No ringing of bells, no association with the name, never heard of him. He is the man responsible for launching America's space program. Robert Gilruth was born in Nashwauk, Minnesota, and from the time he was a little tyke, he was fascinated with flight. When it came time to go to college, Robert enrolled at the University of Minnesota and completed not only a BA degree in aeronautical engineering, but a master's degree as well. He later joined the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, the predecessor of NASA, and his career really took off. Well, you remember hearing about Sputnik. As a young man in college at the time, I was disappointed to hear Russia was able to place a man in space before our country. Did this mean dominance over us by another country? It was a bit scary at the time. Gilruth probably felt the same way, with a bit more urgency to compete with the Russians. He was assigned to place the first American in space. He and his team worked on a top-secret project called Project Mercury, the first U.S. human space flight program. Gilruth was responsible for designing the Mercury capsule, which can be seen at the Space Museum at Cape Canaveral. He was also responsible for the Mercury propulsion system, requirements for astronauts' qualifications, and mission control procedures. No small task, I might add. Some of his other work with NASA included directing the manned spacecraft center in Houston, Texas. So when the words came over the air, "Houston, we have a problem," who was ultimately responsible? Robert Gilruth. Just think, he was born and raised Iron Ranger from Minnesota. Gilruth conceived and developed the Gemini program and was also responsible for the spacecraft design and selection and training of the astronauts and ground crew for the Apollo missions. He directed 25 manned space flights, including Alan Shepard's first Mercury flight, the first lunar landing by Apollo 11, and the dramatic rescue of Apollo 13. Did anyone watch the movie? If you did, you witnessed what actually happened in the Apollo 13 incident, which was as close to reality without it being a documentary. Director Ron Howard did an excellent job, as well as Tom Hanks, who portrayed one of the astronauts. If you recall, there was an explosion on board, and with assistance of many, they were able to splash down in the Pacific and be rescued. If things would have been worse, if things would have been different and the astronauts would have lost their lives, the entire space program would have been set back for many years. We have to give Bob Gilruth credit, because without him, there would be no Mercury, Gemini, or Apollo program, according to NASA colleague George Lowe. Lowe said, and I quote, "It is clear to all who have been associated with him that he has been the leader of all that is manned spaceflight in this country," unquote. Quite a tribute, wouldn't you say? Now here is Jan with a tribute of her own.
Well, how am I going to find something local that has to do with architects or astronauts? I don't think so. So I went with something totally different, something I've been wanting to use for quite a while and just really didn't have a place for it. So here we go. Our tribute today is about the old clothesline. And how the clothesline was a dead giveaway to the way things happened at your house. The basic rules of having a clothesline was you had to wash the clothesline before you hung out the clean clothes. So you walk the length of each line with a damp cloth to get all the dust and whatever the birds might have left. That had to be washed first. Then, number two, you had to hang the clothes in a certain order, and usually that was the order in which they were washed, which meant that the white things went first and worked their way down to the dirty jeans. You always hang the whites with the whites and the coloreds with the coloreds. You always hung the sheets and towels on the outside lines so that you could hide your unmentionables in the middle. Wash day was usually on a Monday. You never hang clothes on your clothesline on the weekend or Sunday, for heaven's sake. And you never hung a shirt by the shoulders. No, no. Always by the tail of the shirt so that the arms of the shirt could hang and blow in the breeze. It didn't matter if the weather was really cold because the clothes would always freeze dry. And in the wintertime, when they were stiff as boards, you brought them into the house to let them finish drying. And, oh, is there anything like the smell in your house after that fresh air has been brought inside? You never leave the clothespins hanging on the line when you've finished taking down the clothes. Leaving the clothespins on the line was considered tacky, and it would maybe reflect that the inside of your house might be a bit tacky, too. If you were efficient, you would line up the clothes so that each item did not need two clothespins, but shared one with the item that was next to it. In other words, you'd only need about half as many clothespins. You had your clothes off the line before dinner time, neatly folded in the clothes basket, and ready to be ironed. Ironed? What's that? Well, that's a whole other subject. Something else that most of the younger generation don't know a whole lot about, at least as far as ironing a whole batch of clothes, especially those that had been sprinkled. Well, here's a poem about the old clothesline. A clothesline was a news forecast to neighbors passing by. There were no secrets you could keep when clothes were hung to dry. It also was a friendly link, for neighbors always knew if company had stopped on by to spend a night or two. For then you'd see the fancy sheets and towels upon the line. You'd see the company tablecloths with intricate design. The line announced a baby's birth to folks who lived inside, as brand new infant clothes were hung so carefully with pride. The ages of the children could so readily be known by watching how the sizes changed, you'd know how much they'd grown. It also told when illness struck, as extra sheets were hung. Then nightclothes and a bathrobe, too, haphazardly were strung. It said, gone on vacation now, when lines hung limp and bare. It told, we're back, when full lines sagged, with not an inch to spare. New folks in town were scorned upon if their wash was dingy gray, as neighbors carefully raised their brows and looked the other way. But clotheslines now are of the past, for dryers make work less. Now what goes on inside a home is anybody's guess. I really miss that way of life. It was a friendly sign when neighbors knew each other best by what hung on the line. And I have to say, I do miss my clothesline. I don't have a clothesline now, and I'm glad I have a porch railing to hang out quilts and blankets to air, and rugs that need some shaking.